Solve, secure, protect. Look to Patel for the independent thinking and cross-disciplinary focus it takes to advance security and safety in a changing world. They provide their clients with integrated solutions that secure our nation and help solve challenges within infrastructure, environment, emerging threats, and deployable mission-ready technology. Their teams leverage their deep expertise to develop science and technology for a healthier, safer, and more sustainable world. Visit Battelle.org to learn how Battelle makes the impossible possible. Welcome to From the Crow's Nest, a podcast on electromagnetic spectrum operations, or EMSO. I'm your host, Ken Miller, Director of Advocacy and Outreach for the Association of Old Crows. You can follow me on Twitter at FTCNHost. Thanks for listening. In this episode of From the Crow's Nest, we go back to AOC Europe in Bonn, Germany, to listen in on a conversation that I had with writer and analyst Tom Withington. As many of you know who have followed me on Twitter, we were at AOC Europe broadcasting live using Twitter Spaces. We released several episodes each day, and we had the opportunity to talk to a number of the presenters, exhibitors, and other attendees there at the show and kind of get a sense for all the great topics and information that we were gathering. Tom Withington was a guest co-host of mine throughout the week. I greatly appreciated his time, and he was gracious enough to give me a little bit extra to sit down with him over a beer and just talk a little bit more comprehensively about some of the stuff that we heard at the conference. So I wanted to bring that to you today. If you're interested in hearing more from the episodes, I do encourage you to go to my profile on Twitter at FTCNHost, and all the episodes are still on my profile page, and you can download those and listen to those and get a sense for everything that was talked about. But without further delay, let's listen in. In this episode, we are coming to you live from AOC Europe. We are in Bonn, Germany, and I am here with special guest, Dr. Tom Withington, writer and analyst. I have had him on From the Crow's Nest before, just a few months ago, to talk about JADC2. But we've been here at the show doing some live streaming and talking to the speakers, talking to exhibitors. So I wanted to take a few moments to have Tom on the show again here for this episode to talk a little bit about what we're learning at AOC Europe here this week, the theme being how to achieve multi-domain operations. So Tom, thanks for joining me here on the show.
And it's always a pleasure to catch up. I'm thrilled to be here. You've made it over this side of the pond. And I think we've had a great day's discussion and a great day's conversation, really. So lots to talk about.
Absolutely. And, you know, we tried to set this up at a local pub here down the street, had some signal issues. And so now we're coming from another location, but we still have the beer. So I'm not really sure how this conversation is going to go, but I'm sure nothing can go wrong.
Well, I give a bit of a shout out to anybody out there in the ether who is a connoisseur. We're both enjoying a Hopfenbräu, which is a Weissbier or a wheat beer, as they refer to in Germany. And it's going down rather well, isn't it? And I think it's quite apt, given we were talking about the spectrum, that we managed to find the only pub in Germany that doesn't seem to have spectrum.
Exactly. So, I appreciate your flexibility in this. And of course, you know, it's been a long couple days here. We're all jet lagged. We're all working 16-hour days, and now we are drinking beer. So I wanted to go to talking about a little bit about the overarching theme. You spoke today, and we'll get to your presentation in a second, but you know, it is very interesting because, you know, from U.S. perspective, when we talk multi-domain operations, we talk about obviously within the context of Army, Air Force, Marines, and so forth. But in Europe, you know, now we have the European piece that we talk about coalition warfare, and multi-domain operations takes on a whole different feel to it. Talk a little bit about what have we been learning in the first day here at the conference as it pertains to achieving multi-domain operations. And, you know, we've heard from several different countries, several different organizations, from members of parliament to military generals. So what thoughts stick in your head?
The big thing, and I suppose the big takeaway for me from this event is, it maybe sounds a little bit cliche to say it, but it's the connectivity question. When I first started getting into electronic warfare, a lot of the conversation was about, you know, find, fixing, and then treating the target, whether that's, you know, deny, degrade, damage, etc. Whereas now, we're taking that as read that we've got the assets that we need to find the signal of interest in all of the noise and then to get an effect on it, whatever that effect might be. But the big question now has moved to the network. We know that we need to make a better quality of decision at a faster clip than our adversary. That's probably the secret of prevailing, not just in the electromagnetic environment, but I think probably in all domains of conflict. So a long time, I think one of the things that we sort of took as read is, well, what happened then? It's not going to be a problem. You know, we'll go to war and this will all be there. Whereas I'm very heartened to the people are now saying, okay, do we have the networks? The conversation has shifted in tenor a little bit. But if we do have the networks, two things, do they have the carriage that we need to move the information around? Are they resilient? And crucially, are they redundant? Because we see these very lovely graphics with a lot of lines between warships and aircraft and land assets and satellites and all of that, zeros and ones going between them. But we all know that in reality, heavens forbid, if we are at war, maybe half of those will be available. So how do we scale that? How do we deal with that? So that's a big takeaway for me. But I think often with these events is you've got your immediate takeaways, but then there'll be the ones that you think of in like 2 months or 3 weeks, whatever it is, going, it's good somebody brought that up.
Yeah. So I've had the opportunity to speak with a lot of the presenters this week, some of the exhibitors. And for those of you listening, you can go onto Twitter at FTCN host and download all the recordings that we've been doing, the live streaming this week. But you know, the connectivity piece has come up time and again, and I appreciate your thoughts on this. And one of the things that we've talked about is it's one thing to say in a physical space, you can connect communication signals and so forth. But when you get into the organizational element of how a particular force will communicate and share information, decision-making across another force, another country's organization, it becomes much more difficult to handle. We heard a little bit about that today. How do we keep pace with this need for fast decision-making, for fast connectivity in an era where coalition warfare and having to be on the same page across countries, partner countries, this is the warfare of the future. So it seems to exponentially increase some of the problems that we face with connectivity.
I think one of the things we're lucky with in NATO is that in many ways, the rules of the road are already there because we've dealt with things like Legion Medal Link 16, tactical data links that we're using to move tactical information either around the air environment, obviously Link 11, the maritime domain. In a sense, we've got the rules of the road. We know that if you're involved in an air operation, if the US is a lead nation, if it's a NATO-led initiative, then really the rules of the road is, okay, everybody, if you've not got Link 16, you can't really come along and play. You know, you've got to have this. So I think a lot of it is about realizing, well, what standards do we have already? Where are we at the moment? We've been talking a lot about StatNex over the past few days. So what do we have in place that is already the rules of the road for NATO members, saying if you want to move information between each other or within your forces, these are the standards that you've got to follow. So that's good news. We've got a bedrock there we can build from. But I think the crucial thing for me is that we need to realize wherever we are in NATO, that we constantly need to be keeping other people abreast with what we're doing. There's a big European initiative called ISIL, European Secure Software Defined Radio Waveform, which is a high data rate waveform that's coming on stream amongst about 8 different European countries. And this is going to be quite a transformational technology. It's a wideband link, primarily for land operations, but it allows, let's say you've got Finnish troops on one side of the line of advance, you've got French troops on the other, they've just now got a bridge between them in terms of a high data rate waveform. But the crucial thing is, that's great, but how is that dovetailing into what JADC2 is doing? Are we confident that when the Americans are involved, they can come and play as well, that they've got a gateway into ESSEL? And the thing is with this is that it actually makes a lot of the kind of workaday stuff that perhaps doesn't get the crack of the whip it deserves suddenly very, very pertinent, because link translation, this is going to become very, very important. Are we confident that we can move this traffic through these link translators and that traffic stays secure? So I think the short answer would be, let's look at what we already have in the StatNex realm. Let's look at how we're already doing things and think, what can we learn from that in terms of how we then do connectivity in other areas moving forward?
I had you on the show a couple months ago. We were talking JADC2, and I think, you know, we addressed this question a little bit. But one of the frustrating things that I have about JADC2 is a great concept, But when you try to figure out what's that concept mean in terms of actual warfighting, you start to get into all the service contributions to that construct. And then once you get into the service contributions, you're looking into the separate organizational elements. And if you step back and look at it, it's hard to sometimes identify what is being done differently that's game-changing in the JADC2 kind. There is stuff, but from a communications, as you just mentioned, we have to talk about it differently and show what that we're able to get those capabilities in the field. If you step back even further and you look at it from a NATO perspective or regional, you have countries each contributing their own construct and so forth down to through their organizational structure. So what do you see from a European perspective that is giving you hope that, the conversation about the need for information superiority, for spectrum superiority is moving in the right direction and actually changing the way we fight, not just in words, but down through the organization?
Well, the conference over the past 2 days has given me significant hope from that score, because we've got delegates from all over the alliance and from allied countries as well who are coming in. And everybody is really, in a sense, speaking the same language. We had a great presentation today from some of our German colleagues, and they were talking about the important work that they're doing there. We've heard from other coalition nations. We've heard from arguably smaller nations like Belgium, for instance, what their roadmap is, the Netherlands, how they're seeing this. So everybody, in a sense, gets it. The product's been sold, everybody's buying into it. And which is a good thing, because buy-in is really important in NATO. And one of the sort of ironies with NATO is that if you look at it from a hardware point of view, there's actually not that much that NATO has managed to sort of standardize from the hardware perspective, beyond ammunition, these kind of things, but platforms. Yeah, it's been more difficult since its existence. But where they have managed to do this is in terms of things like connectivity, command and control, all of these standards. So the thing I'm really encouraged about is there's nobody there who's saying, hang on a second, we've got this all wrong, we shouldn't be doing this, we should be saying more stuff like, this is what, this has its advantages, are we throwing the baby out with the bathwater? Everybody's on the same page. One of the big challenges that we're going to have is I think a lot of these efforts will develop at different speeds, and that's where it's going to be really challenging, because what you risk is in any coalition operation, you end up fighting that war with whoever rocks up, broadly speaking, and what they bring. What are you going to do when everybody's levels of connectivity and everybody's adoption of MDI, whatever form it takes, or MDO, is at different points? Because it will be. That's the thing. And I always think, in a sense, we need to start thinking about that now, because what we don't want to be thinking about it is when it's on D-Day plus one, So as we go through these processes, and it's brilliant, everybody's on the same page, everyone gets it. That's fantastic. But we also need the person in the room who's going to ask the difficult question. So if there's a war tomorrow, okay, country A, can you talk to country B? If not, what are you going to do about that?
Well, and that's been something that's, kind of followed electronic warfare for decades. Yeah. It's this idea of having to wait until that crisis moment to realize how important it was. And we've seen this on the U.S. side, where we'll be talking about, we'll be beating the drum for years and years, and we know what's going to happen. We know we need it, but we have to wait to that crisis to get that kind of stimulus into the system where it's actually affecting real change.
Hello, everyone. I want to take a short break to thank Battelle for their continued support for our From the Crow's Nest podcast. It's always great to hear from them, and I am pleased to be here with Rusty Cole Morgan, Navy veteran and division manager at Battelle. Rusty, thanks for joining me here on From the Crow's Nest. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks very much, and thanks for the opportunity.
You've had an interesting career with extensive stints in the Navy and industry. What brought you to Battelle, and how does your experience align with Battelle's mission?
Yeah, thanks for that, Ken. And I did have a very rewarding career as a Navy pilot. And as I transitioned through a number of companies in industry, I continued to have great experiences because I got the chance to work alongside eye-watering technical talent. What I'm most excited about at Battelle is how our campus is literally surrounded by an impressive depth of relevant applied researchers. That uniquely embedded in-house research capability serves as a foundation as we focus on solutions to the world's hardest problems. We strive to create a better world through science, and The RavenStar technology is the latest example of a hard problem with wide society benefits.
In the past, we've heard here on From the Crow's Nest from your colleagues, Doug Thornton and Molly Engel. They provided some intriguing insights about the RavenStar antenna. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the challenges of this trade space and what you're trying to address with this game-changing technology?
Well, the bottom line is that users have had to sub-optimize their capabilities and needs with traditional design approaches in the RF spectrum. Traditionally, electronic warfare and command and control users on a number of capabilities that create a challenging design space. Those needs are typically long ranges, maximum throughput, and low probability of intercept, low probability of detection. They want those ranges for more effective operational reach or standoff, and they want more throughput for the increased data that leads to actionable intelligence. And those tight control of the emissions, they want those for either maximizing energy on a particular bearing or limiting the ability to detect or interfere with their emissions. It's not an easy trade space, but the flexibility of the RavenStar architecture gives them more of what they want operationally.
So what does the RavenStar do that makes it optimized across these critical performance needs, and how does that stand out from traditional approaches?
Well, our frequency agility gives operators flexibility to work an ultra-wide portion of the spectrum through a single low-swap software-defined aperture. RavenStar co-designed extremely wide band aperture arrays with co-located advanced electronics. And this allows a compact, frequency-flexible RF solution. Our approach minimizes conventional antenna feature trade-off and allows significant design flexibility for delivering the spectrum dominance that's needed.
We've been tracking this program here on the show. How mature is RavenStar today?
We put it at a TRL 6 after testing that we've done in December of 2023, and continuing into this year, we'll do field tests, accompany lab demonstrations, and development performance on formal efforts with different DoD customers, all that are pointed toward a continued maturation of the RavenStar design. They show the RavenStar's ability is to support all domain missions that require multiple communications.
Well, thank you, Rusty, for joining me here on the show. It's always great to hear from the Patel team. And now it's time to get back to our show.
You mentioned some great presentations this morning. You were one of them. So thank you for your participation. You spoke on multi-domain operations, but you focused on the notion of integration and the role that that plays in this idea of MDO. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what you shared with the audience today?
But my perspective was really to try and take the audience through where we've been and where we're going, which sounds sort of terribly predictable, really. But the point I was trying to make is we've been through the revolution of in military affairs. We've been through network-centric warfare. We're going through multi-domain operations, and we're going through multi-domain integration as well. And they're subtly different. The UK Ministry of Defence is very, very keen on multi-domain integration. It's produced a number of papers about it. It's had some good discussion. And what their approach is about having a whole of government approach. And it has a lovely sort of logical jump off point, if you like, or springboard, which is that as we face competition now, competition doesn't just happen on the battlefield. It can happen across all elements of statecraft. We've seen things like allegations of electoral interference in our democracies across the world. We see fake news. We deal with it every day. We have all of these challenges, and they're competitive challenges, but they're happening in an unconventional way because they're attacking other parts of our statecraft. So how do we marshal our statecraft as a whole to deal with that? And that requires a whole of government approach. And that can be a difficult thing to people to buy into.
And with that all of government approach, you know, I think that the key is it steps outside of your defense ministries or departments of defense. It's energy, it's treasury, it's every possible, because it's an all of society problem too. And as we've seen in, you know, Ukraine and just obviously wars in the past, when you are in conflict or war, it's disruptive across the board in everybody's life. And in the spectrum, that's the same case. So with this all government approach, how do you get there? Because I mean, we can send leader after leader from our defense ministries up to the stage, they'll beat the same drum. But we found that, at least in the U.S., once you start talking about it outside of DoD, once you start talking about it in the other agencies of government that have to be a part of this conversation, the tone changes. So how do you get to that all of government approach? I agree it is, but is it, from a European perspective, how is that embraced as an all of government approach, or is it still struggling from a moving it from the defense ministry to other agencies?
I think it's a great question, Ken, actually. And I think you need to have probably an all of government, from the European perspective, an all of government approach across the board for pretty much everything as well as defense. An example I would use is in the UK, the National Health Service, which is kind of the state provider of healthcare. I remember a discussion a few years back about the quality of hospital food. Bear with me, there is a link with what we're talking about. And one of the issues was that the government was having a very, understandably, was trying to get people to eat healthily and you know, watch their weight and do all of these things to cut their own exposure to cancer and heart disease and all of these kind of things. But what was exposed was that the quality of and the nutritional quality of food in British hospitals was shocking. And so, and you're thinking, but hang on, you've got this overarching goal as a government to get people more healthy. But when people are going into hospital, they're suddenly eating very bad food. Or you can look at it from the questions regarding climate change. You know, the government is committed to reducing greenhouse gases and all of this. But then if you're promoting policies elsewhere, government is that's increasing that, then that's detrimental to that goal. So I think the thing is to take the premise that this is an all of government an all of government problem. In fact, it's almost an all of society problem. So it needs an all of society and government response. So it's one of those things, you as a policymaker, as a civil servant, whoever, you always need to have it at the back of your mind. We're going to do this. Is there security input cost? Are we exposing ourselves in some way to vulnerability? It doesn't have to dominate the thinking necessarily, but it should be there. And I think so, in a sense, to take defense as a sort of isolated point of this requires a whole of government approach. But actually, in a sense, all of government requires an all of government approach, you know, and defense is part of that conversation thing.
Right. And I think that gets back to education. You know, one of the challenges from an advocacy perspective is it's very easy to jump deeply into the technical conversation.
Yeah.
Where you actually lose many of the audience members that you're trying to reach. You know, stepping back and just talking about how electromagnetic spectrum basically just interrupts or disrupts society as a whole and things that they are familiar with can actually have a positive effect on the conversation and get people's attention. And so it's a challenge to both move the ball forward in a highly technical field, but do so in a way that's not technical and kind of reaches everybody and makes it a relevant concern on everybody's mind.
Absolutely. And I think if you really want to emphasize to somebody the effect that, let's say a very strategic level cyber attack is going to have, or, you know, maybe not so much jamming, but this comes into it as well. Ask anybody, right, you know, tonight you're going home, you've been to the cinema, for our American friends, you can't get an Uber, you know, and okay, great. We'll use public transportation. That's down this, the signaling's down on the Washington DC Metro. Okay. At that time, you don't know what's happening, but this could well be that you've had a denial of service attack. Imagine saying to the average kind of 14, 15-year-old, not going to access TikTok or Instagram because something's happened. So I agree with you. I think a lot of the time we have to have the conversation about things that people can relate to in their everyday life and realize that this is a consequence of where we are and it's real.
And it's not just the denial of service, and it's the effect that it has on people's ability to function in subsequent decision making. I was in DC on 9/11, and when all of a sudden that happened, things shut down. People panicked, and once people started panicking, they were not making rational decisions. Once there was the irrational decision, and there was this escalating, snowballing effect to the problem that we weren't prepared for. So you not only have, it's not just like, oh, well, you know, you could deny some sort of service that you rely on. It's going to trigger cascading effects. And that's kind of why we see a lot of like test cyber attacks and so forth around the globe and just trying to figure out how does a certain action disrupt your life and see how you respond. And if you don't respond properly, then that keys in exactly where your vulnerability is. And so it feels like we're constantly chasing our vulnerabilities a lot, beloved Tom. So, you know, kind of sticking with your presentation, then, like, what do you think are some of the key steps that have to be taken to more effectively and rapidly address some of the vulnerabilities we know today and we anticipate confronting?
I mean, I think it's very hard because it's in a sense, it's hard to anticipate the actions of your adversary to a point. But I think you've got to look at where you've got to look inwardly at your own societies and try and see where the vulnerabilities are. I mean, it's a bit like what militaries do on the battlefield, for instance, is that, you know, you would hope you've got the electronic protection, men and women in near the forward line of engagement going, yeah, you know, you probably want to switch that off. You probably want to have a bit more MCON emissions control, whether that, you know, red teaming quite a lot, looking at the vulnerabilities are, looking at how they're going to be addressed. At first blush, it seems to be a completely insurmountable task, but I don't believe it is. I think it's a case of just, and also realizing, again, going back to this topic, that competition now is a whole of government thing, because it's the whole of government that's going to be targeted. And so how do you deal with that? So where are your vulnerabilities? What things are you prepared to let be vulnerable if you can protect something that's more prescient or whatever it might be, which I know is a bit of a sort of, it's a bit of a kind of fudging the answer, but the problem is, in a sense, there's no magic bullet. And looking at sort of how does the military manage what it does in the electromagnetic spectrum, and what can we learn from the almost sort of from the EW101, all the stuff you learn, right? Well, how much of that can you actually bleed through into the civilian life, whether you're just an individual with your own business, whether you're a government department? I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from doing that. But then that comes back into this thing about having a conversation with people, making them aware of the threats, you know, making sure some people on the person on the street understands that, you know, we're facing difficulties and we need to mitigate.
I'm sure this will open up, you know, we have one more day of the conference here. This episode will air later in May, but we are currently live streaming from the Crow's Nest as well on Twitter Spaces. And so if you want to get more in depth in terms of some of the discussion, you can go to Twitter, follow me at FTCN host, and you'll see all the recordings, the live streaming that we're doing throughout the week. We are out of time, and I do see that we are set for another round. And unfortunately, I don't think we can handle another round and still do podcasts. I think we're going to call it today, but I do greatly appreciate you taking time to join me here on From the Crow's Nest once again. And we'll see you on our live stream tomorrow as we wrap up the show. But thanks again for joining me.
And it's a real pleasure. Always good to catch up. Thanks so much.
That will conclude this episode of From the Crow's Nest. I want to thank once again my guest, Tom Withington, for taking a few moments out of his busy schedule at AOC Europe to sit down with me and share some of his thoughts about the conference. As always, you can rate, share, and subscribe to this podcast, and we always enjoy hearing from our listeners. You can also follow me on Twitter at FTCNhost. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Battelle, the world's largest independent, not-for-profit, applied science and technology organization. Since 1929, their mission has been to translate scientific discovery and technology advances to benefit society. Through markets such as health, environment, infrastructure, industry, and national security, Battelle has been delivering cutting-edge solutions that impact the well-being of the world and help keep us safe at home. To learn more, go to battelle.org/connect. That's BATTELLE.org/connect.